Welcome, Governor Murphy.
Nice to be with you. Good to be back in Berlin.
Glad to have you in times when, domestically speaking, it's very difficult for the U.S. And I was wondering, after this despicable attack on Donald Trump, whether there's reason to be concerned about the democracy and also the stability of the U.S.
I don't think there's a reason to be concerned about democracy or stability in the bigger sense. But this was a heinous act, completely unacceptable. We immediately put a statement out praying for President Trump, reminding folks to God bless America, that violence has no role to play in politics. We're a divided country at the moment. There's no question about it. But I don't think it shakes it to our foundation. But I do believe we have to come together first and foremost as Americans. And God willing, we will.
When we look from a German point of view at the campaigns being conducted in the U.S., we've been wondering for a long time how much of this degrading, personally attacking is accepted in the U.S. And of course, there are voices now who claim maybe this violent language has sort of sparked what has happened now.
Perhaps. I don't know at this sitting much about the perpetrator. It looks like he was behaving by himself, a registered Republican, I might add, interestingly enough. But the language, the way of politics these days in campaign, and I could not agree more, is extremely divisive and frankly unproductive. I've got a colleague in Utah, a Republican governor, by the way, who just stepped down as the chair of the National Governors Association, and his theme for his year was disagree better. Don't compromise beyond your principles. Don't cave, but let's listen to each other. Let's understand each other's viewpoints, and then let's go forward trying to find common ground. That's what we need more of.
I wish it worked, but apparently it doesn't. But you said there's no reason to be concerned about the state of democracy.
I wouldn't say no reason, but I don't think it's shaken to our foundations.
I'm glad you're adding this, because there's been concern by analysts and experts for a long time who claim that the U.S. can no longer be listed among the liberal democracies, such as Canada, Japan, most of the European countries, but needs to line up with Greece, Israel, Poland, Brazil.
Yeah, I don't want to denigrate those other countries, but I believe we continue to be one of the great liberal democracies of the past 250 years. But there, listen, elections have consequences. There is no question this is a stark choice between, at the presidential level at least, between another term for President Biden or another term for President Trump. We will behave very differently under those two scenarios. Let there be no doubt about that.
There's been a lot of talk about the decline of the U.S. democracy in recent years, even before Donald Trump appeared on the scene. And let's look at some of the problems that are very apparent. For starters, the Electoral College. I mean, from a European point of view, it's really strange that somebody can win a presidential election without winning the popular vote. Shouldn't we be doing away with this system? I mean, it was valid 230 some years ago, yeah, but maybe not anymore.
Yeah, I'm open-minded to that. You would think that the person with the most votes would be elected president.
That would make sense.
And my party's person has won either four of the last five or five of the last six on that basis. I think the bigger challenge, the bigger, not threat to democracy, but challenge at a minimum, is the lack of turnout, the lack of participation, particularly among young people. Our levels of turnout are low and unacceptably low. To me, that's almost job number one to turn that around.
But there's also the problem that's pointing to this, what you're saying, that in recent years, not only under Republican presidents, a lot of laws have been put into place that reduce the voters' access to the ballots.
Yeah, most
make it more difficult.
Most of the voting laws in America, not all, but most are at the state level. So you see, listen, this is a reality. Based on laws that have been passed at the state level, based on a radical, right-tilted U.S. Supreme Court, we are a patchwork quilt set of states. It matters where you live and work. If you care about voting rights, gun safety, LGBTQIA plus considerations, the environment, reproductive freedom and abortion rights, we unfortunately now, it matters where you live and work. If you live and work in New Jersey, you're on the right side of those values. If you live and work in Texas, you're on the other side of those values. But most of those laws are passed at the state level. Not all of them, but most of them, particularly in voting rights.
Critics looking at the democratic system in the U.S. also say there's too much money involved. And that, of course, by way of being donors, gives too much influence to companies on the political agenda.
I wouldn't say companies, no, individuals, because a company contribution is complicated. But there's too much money in our political system. There's
you no need question to buy your it. Candidacy in a way.
I wouldn't say that, but you have to raise a lot of money. Anita, your glass is half empty. Do you realize that? Every one of these questions has a negative bias. you got to turn this thing up, man. We're
America. I'm waiting for your positive answer.
We're America. But there's too much money in our political system. There's no question about that. But I wouldn't say you have to buy it. Most of the donations, particularly post-Howard Dean, remember Howard Dean 20 years ago? Most of the donations these days are small dollar donations, which I think is a good thing for democracy. I think having caps on how much at most you can contribute is a good thing.
But there's an insane amount of money involved in the campaigns, billions.
We hosted President and Mrs. Biden, this is public knowledge, 2 days after his debate last month. And at a relatively small table, we raised $3.7 million as an example. By the way, I'm proud we did it. I believe in President Biden. He's had an extraordinary administration, but that's a lot of money.
Another problem with the U.S. democracy seems to be the judiciary, and it has over the years, so it seems, become even less impartial than it's always been. So would you agree with those who say it's become much more politicized?
I'm not sure it's much more politicized, but the members who have been appointed of late to the U.S. Supreme Court appear to have an agenda. And what you want, I was going to use a baseball term that won't go over terribly well with your German listeners, but you want a Schiedsrichter that calls this as it is, that is not in the camp of one of the teams playing. You want judiciary to be objective. And I fear that the crop of, not all, I guess, but a lot of the folks that have been put on, particularly during President Trump's last term, appear to have an agenda, and that's a problem.
As a former ambassador to Germany, you're aware with our system of the highest court, Verfassungsgericht, your Supreme Court, so to speak. And wouldn't you agree that it would be worth considering changing the rules? For example, with our Supreme Court, the Verfassungsgericht, you don't get appointed for a lifetime, mm-hmm. and you need two-thirds majority in both mm-hmm. houses, Bundesrat yep. and Bundestag. And that, of course, prevents the court to be too politically yeah. leaning towards one or the other side.
I am open-minded to anything that is reasonable. I'll give you an example. In New Jersey, there are seven members of our state Supreme Court. There's a mandatory retirement age of 70. And there is a norm that there is political balance. So the incumbent governor, in my case as a Democrat, has sort of an unspoken responsibility to have balance between Democrats and Republicans. And that's what we've achieved, 4 Democrats, 3 Republicans. That, to me, those two elements, a mandatory retirement age, a sort of responsibility or obligation to keep it balanced politically, those are two sort of guardrails that have worked really well in New Jersey.
Would you say that chances to change voters' rights or the way the Supreme Court judges are being appointed has a chance to be changed at all? Because you'd need two-thirds majorities in both houses of Congress, I don't see it coming.
As I sit here, I haven't thought a lot about it of late, but as you ask me this cold, I don't think in this divided political environment that one party is going to unilaterally disarm, if you will. So we'll see. I certainly am open-minded to it, and I can tell you for sure that New Jersey State Supreme Court is a national model because we do have a retirement age because we do respect partisan balance.
There's been a shock ruling, so to speak, of the Supreme Court on the immunity of the president. Now, it seems to us from afar as if presidents to be, to come, be they Democrats or Republicans, are more or less kings now, because it seems as if it's next to impossible to even impeach them, to hold them responsible for their deeds, for their actions in offices.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word kings, but it was a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that was disappointing, but sadly not unexpected. Again, this is not something that shocked, unfortunately, I say this for all the wrong reasons. It did not shock me. It did not shock most Americans. The notion of checks and balances, as you know, is a core principle of our founding and of our Constitution. And I would just hope that in practice going forward, we can still achieve that.
There have been some Democrats who said one should now think of impeaching the Supreme Court judges, because as far as I know, it would be possible. Would you be behind this notion?
I haven't given any thought to that. I've got my hands full in New Jersey, I have to say, Annetta. You have to ask me an upbeat question. Give me something.
Okay.
What are the prospects for American football? The next World Cup, something like that.
That's going to be towards the end of this interview.
Okay. I might be dead by the time we get to the end.
Yeah, I need to bother you some more.
Yeah, you're doing a good job.
Thank you very much. Biden, he'll be officially nominated, if everything works the way it's supposed to, mid-August. Yep. As the nominee. Now, since this fatal debate against Trump on the 27th of June, his every step, his every word has been scrutinized. So this debate seems to be sort of Armageddon for the Democrats. The pressure, you would agree, is rising for him to step back.
No, I don't think anymore. I think the president has come through that. And we'll see by the time this airs in a few days whether or not I'm proven to be right. But I believe he has weathered a very challenging storm, but I also would admit to you, nobody saw President Trump getting shot in the head and almost being killed. So this is a tragic, horrible, horrific event that nobody saw coming. That doesn't impact is President Biden's age or his debate performance, but he will be our nominee.
But even before this fatal event, this attack on Trump, there were several Democrats, both in offices and out of offices. Yep. They are the liberal media who are leaning towards the Democrats. They're key donors who are threatening to freeze donation money. So, I mean, I just don't buy it that you don't see that the pressure is rising, the outcome might be.
I'm not saying the pressure isn't high. The pressure is high. When you're the leader of the free world, you're used to high pressure. So I would say Joe Biden's been on the scene for over 50 years. Listen, Bernie Sanders just full-throatedly endorsed him last weekend. That's a big deal among progressives. That's a big game changer in terms of folks coming out.
But there are 80% of U.S. citizens and even 76% of Democrats who say he's not up to the job. He's too old, and that's not referring to years, but to his performance physically and mentally. He's too old for the job, and he's the leader of the world. I mean,
yeah. My wife and I just had dinner with him and the First Lady. If folks have not been tuning in to Joe Biden, that he wanders in his answers or that he sometimes stutters or has a different train of thought, they haven't known Joe Biden. Joe Biden has been plus or minus that for a long time. Is he 81 years old? Yes, he's 81 years old. He's going to be our nominee, period, in my opinion. And we'll see where this goes. And I know he'll give it everything we got. I'm going to do everything I can to get him reelected. But these are challenging times. These are times that none of us alive today have lived through. And there's just no doubt about that. So I admit to you, this is complicated. If that's what you're after, it's complicated.
Not only complicated, there are those who say that by holding on as Democrats to Biden stubbornly or steadfastly,
I know what you're saying. And
you're paving
the same
way.
Answer.
You're paving the way for Trump to get back into the White House.
All I can say is Joe Biden is going to be the nominee along with Kamala Harris of the Democratic Party. and they're going to fight like heck, and we're going to fight like heck for them. And God willing, at the end of the day, they win.
So
is it uncomplicated? No. Particularly when your opponent is shot in the head? For sure, it's not uncomplicated. Do we have a divided nation? Absolutely. Is Joe Biden 81? Yes, he's 81. Look at his track record. This is the most consequential American administration since Lyndon Johnson, and that was the most consequential since Franklin Roosevelt. In the past, as we sit here today, the way he's prosecuting the alliance in Ukraine, dealing with an extraordinarily difficult challenges in the Middle East, job growth second to no other president in modern history, on and on and on. The Inflation Reduction Act, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, the Chips and Technology Act. These are huge deal accomplishments that have been accomplished in the past several years. These weren't accomplished 30 years ago. These are within the past 3 years. And this is plus or minus still the same guy with a great team. People underestimate the importance of the team around you and the comparison between his team, in this case, and President Trump's team, I think, is an area worthy of shining a light and letting folk into that.
But if I talk to my American friends, this is not an empiric research
sure.
here, but if I talk to some of those being younger, they claim they really don't know what to do. They might abstain from voting at all because, of course, they wouldn't want to vote for Trump. On the other hand, they say they can't vote for Biden because he cannot perform, even if you were up to performing for a couple more months, not the whole 4 years.
Yeah, it's not empirical. We'll see. The polls, I think the data will dictate which way this competition campaign will head. I think we'll know a lot within the next couple of weeks on polling, on the money reality, who's raising money, who's not raising money, and we'll see.
Trump is leading in any of the swing states at this point.
That is correct.
You agree.
The election's not today.
So the idea of having an open convention in August, theoretically possible, doesn't appeal to you?
Whether it does or doesn't, it doesn't because I'm with Joe Biden, but the fact of the matter is it's not going to happen. So it's a nice thing to talk about, but
it's not going to happen. The importance of Kamala Harris is going to rise.
No question.
Because it's not highly unlikely that she might have to take over at a given period in time.
God forbid she won't, because that would be for an unfortunate reason, but she's a real talent, and I think she has been unduly underestimated. I'm not sure if it's because of what she said or done. I fear there's gender bias, there's racial bias. She's led an extraordinary life. Her professional accomplishments have been second to none. I'm personally a huge fan of hers. I think a light shining more brightly on Kamala Harris is a good thing for the Biden-Harris ticket, because there's a lot there.
On a more general note, what does this whole situation tell us about the party's ability or disability to reach out to the next generation? They're very much, it seems to me, concentrated, focused on certain figures or families as such. We're talking about the Clintons or the Kennedys in the past. So isn't there a need for trying to integrate younger hopefuls in the process of policy making?
You always want that.
No, you don't. Do it. You want it, but so far it hasn't happened. Let's put it this way. I mean, there would have been a Gretchen Whitmer. There would have been a Gavin Newsom, a Josh Shapiro.
Every one of those people are all in on the Biden-Harris ticket.
Okay, but what I was trying to find out is whether it should be more an integration process, not of the voters, but of politicians, of the Democrats, so that they can rise and shine when the time comes and people would know about them.
Yeah, when the time comes.
Yeah, but they need to be prepared. They can't get a cold start nobody knows them.
No, I'm biased because I'm a governor, but there's no better job to have to prepare you to be president than being a governor. And you just mentioned three superstars, Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, Josh Shapiro. We have a deep bench. of talent, and they are not only all in for the Biden-Harris ticket, they are deeply integrated into their policies and politics, and they are future stars of the Democratic Party.
And it wouldn't have made sense to sort of integrate them more or give them a shot on center stage, let's say 2 years ago, because I can see why now it could be considered too late to change the ticket.
You know, when Jogi Löw was the trainer for the Mannschaft and they won the World Cup and they're the best team in the world, and for no reason 2 years after that, so in 2016, you made the point, you know what, I just think it's time to turn the page and get someone else in there. And I replied, why? They're the defending world champs. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have had a track record that is only behind Lyndon Johnson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt in terms of transformational policies and governing in the past 100 years. Why do you throw them out? It makes no sense.
I have to admit, I hadn't expected anything else, but is this the majority of voices within the Democrats?
Listen,
because there are too many now who've raised their voices saying we need to change and better do it now.
Are we going
to
spend the next 7.5 minutes on the same question? We're asking the same question.
We may. No. I have more for you.
But seriously, it's not going to happen. We will find out. That's why they play the game. It's why they play the full 90 minutes. There's a score at the end of this. We're going to find out what the score is. Admittedly, and this is complicated. Joe Biden had a bad debate. All this sort of lack of resolution is in terms of who's on the ticket, who's not, not good for him. Donald Trump getting shot in the head is a shocking development. Most importantly, thank God he's alive. But violence, you know, remember, we're a country that's seen in my lifetime an American president shot and killed. Candidates shot and killed, civil rights leaders shot and killed. This is a huge jolt to the system. We've never gone through this before. We've never gone through 2 or 3 weeks like the two or three weeks in modern times, admittedly, that we've gone through. So I'm not sitting here claiming I've got all the answers, but I do know who's going to be on the ticket, and I do know what they're going to do to try to get reelected and the case they'll make and everything that I'm going to do to try to help them.
At the beginning of his time in offices, Biden had claimed that he would like to reconcile society. But when we look at society right now, they seem to be irreconcilable. And there's even been talk, I read it in the New York Times, about secession, that some of the Democratic state may try to form their own union and Republican state. So how irreconcilable are the two halves of this country?
Yeah, I think you and I are battling out between a glass half empty and a glass half full.
Yeah,
so let me say that again. I just don't see this. Listen, are these challenging times? Yes. Was I shocked that President Trump was shot? Yes. Was I deeply disappointed by Joe Biden's debate performance? Yes. Do I abhor the division and the lack of civility in this country right now, particularly in politics? Absolutely. I'm living it. I'm an elected statewide official. We've had darker moments. We've been in, as a friend of mine who was in Vietnam used to remind me, I've been in tougher spots. I don't mean me, but that was his quote. We as a nation have been in tougher spots, and every single time we've pulled out of it, and I believe we will pull out of this.
It's going to be a little bit more difficult. Here's your half-empty glass again, because the main argument, the main asset for the Democrats being Trump is a threat to democracy, and he might turn into an autocrat, and he might rip off the whole system of division of power and so forth. You can't use it right now anymore, really, because then you'd be feeding into this narrative, oh, you're firing up this whole conflict.
Well, I don't think you can avoid it. I think you could do it without demonizing him. And you have to point out hypocrisy. You've got a party that refuses to ban assault rifles, with its leader being shot by an assault rifle, then not President Trump, to his credit so far as we sit here. It'll be interesting by the time this plays whether or not that'll continue to be the case, but he has so far said the right statesman-like things, and I give him and President Biden a lot of credit. But almost everyone else in his party is blaming this on the party that wants to ban the very weapon that shot President Trump. That's hypocrisy that has to be pointed out.
At the end of this interview, maybe a slightly less existential note, you've come to Berlin to watch the final of the soccer European Championship and, of course, to promote investment opportunities in your U.S. state and New Jersey. In the context of the next Soccer World Championship going to take place in 2 years in Mexico, Canada, and the U.S., the final will take place in New Jersey in Rutherford. I mean, it will put Rutherford on the map,
East Rutherford.
But what is there in it for New Jersey other than publicity?
First of all, thrilled to be back in Berlin. I was honored to serve as our ambassador here from 2009 to 2013. We own a home here. Our kids all speak German. This was a transformative experience for my wife, Tammy, and our four children and myself. We haven't been here in 6 years. So it's great to be back. You're absolutely right. We were here for football. We were at Olympiastadion and saw a great finals match. I wish Germany had been playing. We've been promoting New Jersey aggressively to the German companies, to German business associations, to AmCham and other organizations. I spent some time with Olaf Scholz, with President Steinmeier and First Lady. So this is one of the most existentially important relationships the United States has in the world, more generally. And specifically, New Jersey, Germany is a big relationship. Your folks can't see it. I'm wearing a New Jersey and German flag on my lapel. In my seventh year as governor, it's the only country I've made an official visit to twice. And I'm incredibly honored that it's Germany.
But as far as soccer is concerned and the importance for New Jersey, I mean, there is
going to be a
whole lot of investment,
infrastructure,
what have you, and security. Do you think that the revenues will exceed what needs to be invested?
They will dwarf what's needed to be invested. We estimate that the economic impact will be over $2 billion, that it will create at least 14 or 15,000 jobs. So it's a great sporting event. Eight matches in New Jersey. Our co-host is New York City. It's transformative for our state, for our region, for the sport, and for our economy.
And some of the main partners might be, as was the case in the European Championship, Chinese?
I have no idea what. So there are two levels of sponsorship. The FIFA, which runs the FIFA World Cup. They have their own set of sponsors. I can't speak for them. And then we have a host committee set of sponsors between New York City and New Jersey. My guess is overwhelmingly they're going to be entities that have some presence in that region, and there aren't a lot of Chinese entities that have a presence in our region.
And do you think that the interest of the U.S. public might be big enough? Because usually for you guys, it's football.
So you should know something.
Or baseball.
The World Cup in 1994, which had 24 teams, the World Cup in 2026 will have 48 teams. But go back to 1994, I hope everyone's listening, especially you, that to this day, with only 24 teams, has set and continues to set the all-time attendance record at a World Cup. Okay. We're going to be just fine.
And your dream final?
U.S.-Germany. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Governor Murphy.
Good to see you.